Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to episode 3 of the official Nerd Talk podcast, Geek Speak. I'm your host, Sean, and joined, as always, on this wacky and frightening episode of the episode is my co-host, Josh, the Disney remake repulsed reaction man, Rudy Rudolph. This is the podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for?
That was a really long name of mine, but I do stand by it, though.
The Disney remake repulsed reaction man.
Yes, that's about my reaction every time either I see a Disney remake or I hear of one's existence.
Now, keep in mind, movies like Maleficent, Cruella, Christopher Robin are not remakes. They're original ideas spinning off of movies. They're not remakes. Which is why they're often better. Anyway, so how you doing today, Josh?
I'm doing good, and related to my name, I saw Cruella today before we record this podcast, and I actually really enjoyed it. I've seen no version of 101 Dalmatians, but I have seen I, Tonya, which the director of this movie did. Love Emma Stone, Emma Thompson, both of them were fantastic in this, and it's one of the few Disney quote-unquote remakes, it really isn't, that I would recommend seeing. It is a bit long, though. It's like 2 hours 15 minutes, which I was really surprised by.
When you said... I have seen I, Tonya, though, before I knew it was the same director. That was very weird to just say.
Yeah, I realized after I said that.
I haven't seen 101 Dalmatians, but I have seen a different movie that has nothing to do with Disney. And so you've seen 2 movies in your life. Congrats.
Yes.
So welcome to the podcast. If you're new here, we talk about Disney Channel original movies. We talk about superhero stuff, geeky, nerdy news, Star Wars, Star Trek, Ninja Turtles, and more. Movies, comic books, etc. And today we're focusing on Quiet Place 2, the Halloween movie, Halloween Town, the Disney Channel movie. And we're going to go NDA always with news and super weird stories. Anyway, so stats time. We have a new logo.
Yes.
Today, this podcast, we'll have a new logo, and going forward, we'll have a new logo. And it's us, and we have a bunch of nerdy stuff on us. That's kind of fun. So in terms of stats, we have them. So
good. I'm happy with you.
We're now on Apple Podcasts. That's one thing.
Yee.
So we are on, I think, pretty much everywhere you can get podcasts now, which is great. If you want, there's a place you want to listen to podcasts and we don't have it there yet, let us know and we will, put it there. Just unless if we have access to it. We now have 14 followers on Spotify. Last episode we said we had, six. Now we have 14. Ooh. So thank you for Spotify followers. That's really helpful. That'll help us out a lot, actually.
Yes, thank you.
And now I think 16 unique listeners from Spotify. Different people who have listened to it. So 14 out of the 16 people who have listened to us have followed us. So that's really cool. 21 people, though, have hit play on the podcast on Spotify.
Hey, That's the way you start the podcast, and it's good that they hit the play button.
But that means we have less people who actually kept listening for 60 seconds or more. A lot of false starts. Pretty funny, but thank you for joining for a little bit then. In terms of other stats, we don't have any analytics yet from Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts yet. They're not updated enough, really. So, actually, we have analytics from Google, and our analytics are 0. So...
Well... I mean, it is a number.
It's a big number. Yep. Great number. In terms of other things we have, I think this week or today, it says 5 downloads in general from people listening to us from different mediums. And that's cool for one of our 2 episodes so far. We've gotten more countries listening to us.
Woo!
Welcome to the UK. Welcome to Singapore. Welcome.
Thank you.
21 downloads. Look, we have about 70% of our listeners are from the United States. We have 3 Philippines, 2 Belgium, 2 Canada, 1 Brazil, 1 UK, 1 Singapore so far. And that's a little off because it doesn't take into account like some YouTube and a few other places. But thank you.
It is weird to really think about that. Like, it's not just people in the U.S. Like, people around the world are listening to us. Like, I can't even fathom that right now.
Not a lot.
But not a lot, but still.
Thank you.
Thank you, Belgium person.
And the Philippines. We're big in there now. But three people. Whoa. Big. Big, I say we have 3 people listening to us. Or at least 3 people have hit play once. Anyway, that is the stats. And we have a new logo, like I said. I'm excited for that. I think it looks pretty cool. It cost money because we paid artists. That's great. We got actual professional art done. That's really cool.
Yes.
And watch anything good lately besides Cruella, Josh?
Quiet Place 2, which we'll be talking about.
That's true.
Same as Halloween Town. I did watch Army of the Dead.
Which was originally going to be a topic this week, but then that changed because I was going to last night, but it was, it's 2.5 hours? I don't have time.
It is long, but I would say it is fun. The first time I watched it, I kept the cinephile part of my brain on, and I really did not care for it. But then on rewatch, I turned it off. I was just like, you know what? This is actually pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Although, I will say Snyder's cinematography, because he was the DP of this film, he used a lot of shallow focus. And if for people that don't understand what that means, that's like where it's only focused on like the character and everything else is blurred out in the background. And like he uses it a lot, not just in close-ups, but in also like wide shots. So sometimes it could be annoying, but like it gives it its own unique feel and style. So there is that.
I have some notes like that on The Quiet Place too, we'll get to. But for me, about a week and a half ago, I would want to talk about it last podcast, but I didn't get a chance to, and that was, I watched Kong Skull Island recently-ish. I loved it. I don't understand the hate some of it has right now. I think it's fantastic. The style of me was amazing. The cinematography, the editing, beautiful. Also, it's like 3 MCU people are in it, and also Fantastic Four and Miles Teller is in it, I think. Toby Kebbell?
Toby Kebbell, yeah. The greatest Doctor Doom of all time.
Out of 2, I'm going to say he's not the greatest Doctor Doom of all time.
he is a great actor, though. He was he did the performance mocap for, what's his name?
Apes movies.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with a K. I can't think of it.
Anyway, he's good in it.
Yeah. He's a great actor. Fantastic Four was not good for anyone.
And that was... We'll eventually get to that probably at some point in this podcast. Yes. But not today. So the DCOM, the Disney Channel original movie for this week. So for those who do not know, we watch one every week, going through all of them through history, and like from 97 through now. And this week we watch Halloween Town. I know it should have been a Halloween special. We're gonna do that for the sequels now. We're gonna watch them all around Halloween and do that as one like a few weeks around there. I think that'll be a better way to do that one.
Yeah.
And probably similarly,
I think there's 3 of them.
Yeah, and probably similarly with Christmas things. It'll be better to do it that way. So first things first, the plot, Josh. Explain some of this plot.
So this movie centers on some kids. One is, I think, a 13-year-old girl. One's a dweeby little brother that reminded me way too much of myself at his age. Then younger sister, the mom's like, Halloween is bad. Don't go outside. Don't go doing these things. You'll never understand because I'm not going to explain to you yet. Kids are like, but it's bad. But then grandma comes to visit. She's got candy. She's got a Mary Poppins bag that just never ends. And then they find out, grandma's a witch. That's pretty neat. They follow her on this cool bus to take them to a place called Halloween Town, where like all sorts of manners of monsters and creatures and other things live. But some darkness, bad thing is threatening to, I think, destroy. I'm honestly not really clear on that.
Overall, that's the gist.
Yeah.
We have 3 heroes? We're going to call them that for now. 3 kids, one's like, I don't know, 5. How's the little girl? Sophie? She's like...
I think 5.
She's small. Anyway.
She's a small child.
And then there's the dad on the picture. Did they ever explain that? The dad's not there.
I think he just might be dead. It's the typical Disney, like, cool. Dead parent syndrome.
Cool. Awesome. Love it. grandma's witchy. And then they go to Magicland. They go to Disney World.
Yes. I mean, it looks like it would be, like, a Disney, like,
theme park. it looks more like a theme park than a movie at that point.
Yeah.
And first off, I want to say some fun things that happened in this movie. At the beginning, first off, no one would say ever say, let's skip this house. The beginning, there were like, yeah, there was like two kids who were like, looking at us like, hey, we'll go to this one? Nah, let's go to a different one. Like, you could at least knock on and try first.
Yeah, like, if I always on Halloween, like, if the house had lights, I would go to check to see if there was candy, or at least, like, the idiot people that would just leave the bowl and say, take one, please. Like, no one ever listened to that.
But yeah, that was like, that was a weird line. You could have had a kid go up and knock and then no answer and walk away. And like, guess I'm not here. Like, you'd have at least a better dumb line. Also, the line from the girl, I'm 13 and practically a grown-up. I'm like, that's an actual thing people say. And that was funny, but, like, it hurt to hear. I'm like, shush, girl, shush.
Yeah, like, the whole time I was just like, man, was I really this dumb as a kid? Man, I really sympathize with the parents. This is showing my age, and I'm only 21.
Yeah, anyway, the nerdy kids do not dress like that in life.
No.
Or speak like that.
No.
There's a line he says later on, and I'll get to it soon, but it's just, that was so stupid. Anyway, I'm going to say, honestly, I trust moms in situations like this because they generally probably just know more and care.
Yeah.
Like, at the beginning, I'm like, this mom's saying Halloween's not a good time for us in this house. I'm like, okay, I believe her. Because no mom would say that. I feel like, with their dad mysteriously gone and they're... If this girl knows she's having weird things like deja vu all the time, weird things happening to her, and her mom's like, don't go out on Halloween, this creepy thing's happening, I might be like, why? I might trust that a little bit. Here's, I guess she's 13, must be a kid. Like, as a viewer, I'm like, instantly, yeah, the parents are probably right.
It's always the mentality of kids at that age. It's just like, the parents don't understand. And it's just like, but the parents were at that age. They do understand your mentality. It's just, they're older, they're wiser, I guess, quote unquote, wiser.
Some
they
are.
Have more experience.
Or not all parents are great.
Yeah, no. But yeah, this mom seems like, obviously, to know like what she's talking about. And like, just stupid kids, listen to her.
Here's a great quote. There are things about vegetables that you don't understand. I love the sass on the kid, the 13-year-old. There are things about vegetables you don't understand. Like, that was just so many weird lines that were said, but with this strong sass.
Yeah.
Marnie, which, I think her name was?
Yeah, Marnie. Yeah.
Also, the line, trees are important too, you know. Loved it. Celebrate Arbor Day.
That kid was great, but like the whole time I was just like, this was me at his age. I was just like this super cynical person. I was just like, world's stupid. It's just like, this is all hallucination. Yes. And just like all that is just like, God, that was me at his age.
I understand trying to rationalize a situation like that. That's easier to do. Because like, if you don't know the movie, the kid, nerdier little brother, and when he was in Halloween Town, was thinking, this isn't real. This isn't real. Which honestly, that makes a lot of sense. But I also feel like as a child, you might believe everything you're seeing in that kind of world.
Yeah.
But who knows? I'm not that kid. I also wrote, this already seems like it would be the best of the three when I was watching it.
Yeah.
So far.
Well, it's four of them because there's this one, the second one, Halloween Town High, and then Return to Halloween Town.
Best of the three we've seen so far, DCOMs-wise.
Yeah. It easily is the best one.
That being said, I was more engaged with You Lucky Dog still.
Dogman, amazing character.
Yeah, Dogman's great. There are parts in this that were just boring to me, though. And we'll get to that. I want to say, the line, I really want that cookie, and it just flew to her, made me really jealous. Because I want to be able to do that.
If there's one thing I can complain about is that the formatting of this on Disney Plus was really irritates me. I'm a big proprietor of proper formatting of movies, and clearly this was made like in the 4x3 like box format, but they just zoomed it in to fill it full screen.
You can tell.
Just like all the characters like close up shots, like it's like so close to their face when that's clearly not how it was shot, and it irks me every time companies do that to movies. It's just like, it's widescreen, make it full screen. Doesn't matter. It's like, no. It does matter.
It was also definitely fuzzier.
Of that.
Which I didn't hate that much. I actually had it in a bit of a smaller screen because I was taking notes in my computer on the other side. Like, I had two windows up, so it wasn't a huge deal to me. But I could definitely tell it was some fun problems with that. I wrote down, is there a grandma is a witch trope? Because it feels really familiar, but I can't think of any other examples.
Yeah, like, I feel... Because I know that like, I might have seen like bits and pieces of this as a kid, but I know I've seen like other things with like a grandma witch trope. I just don't know.
I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, exactly.
There's actually Ben 10, Alien Force. That's one example. That's a Grandma Witch. But other than that, I can't think of anything else.
I don't know. Also, so one of the first things I looked up about this movie was Academy Award nominated actress Debbie Reynolds from Singing in the Rain plays the grandma in this, and like, I don't know how to respond to that. Like,
that makes sense. Like, the idea of higher like status characters, like actors, often do smaller like kids roles because it's just fun and light and it's easy. Like George Clooney in Spy Kids.
Yeah, no, I get that, but like, still, like, it was just, it like kind of threw me back because I was just like, this is like the first, at least DCOM that I can think of that had like an Academy Award nominated actor. Now, of course, later on, Bryan Cranston would star in a DCOM in a Christmas movie. Way before Breaking Bad, before he got nominated for Oscars and stuff, and so that's fun to think about.
Yeah, I also think it's pretty funny because I was watching BoJack Horseman yesterday, which I didn't realize how I started season two. I guess kind of kept watching. Mm-hmm. And there's they mentioned a joke about let's make the Kirk Cameron show. I'm like, he's Dog Man. Anyway, that was pretty fun. DCOMs are interesting. Now they have more references because of DCOMs.
Yes,
Marnie, you said to her mom, you think you and grandma could not fight for once? That was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
The sass on Marnie at 13 years old, just, it was perfect. Also, because John Mulaney once said 13 year olds are the worst, and it felt it. It was so true.
Nah.
She felt like a stereotypical 8th grader. I loved it.
Yeah. When their grandma is telling them the story of Halloween Town, she says something like, most magical place on earth or something like that. And Liberty goes, Cleveland? It's just think that Cleveland is the most magical place on earth with like variety of like characters and stuff? Like, what have you been like researching? Cleveland.
That's great. I also wrote hieroglyphics aren't witchy. That's like seeing someone write Spanish and say it's demonic.
Yeah.
A little sus. I'm like, oh, look, it's a language. What?
Also, I love the mom made a big deal about, like, dinner's ready, you can't have cookies or anything like that. Grandma shows up, gives them candy, then they just don't have dinner. It's just like, well, what about eating the food that you made and making a big deal about desserts?
That's better, though, than the trope of, like, people, like, sit down and eat a whole dinner, then have a small fight, and they just don't eat any of the food. Like, get up.
Yeah.
I hate that. There's a moment, the nerdy kid said, encouragement, not good. That was what?
One of my favorite quotes of his is, it proves insanity is hereditary, and I just hope that boys are immune.
Right?
Like, that's great. I love this kid. Like, this character, he's going to be the next John Mulaney.
He reminded me of, in Brink, when the dad said, look at her, she's normal.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of
thing. She's miserable, that's how she's supposed to be.
Also, when the nerdy kid said, I think I'm a big pimple. What was he actually supposed to be? I don't know. A minotaur? A satyr? Was he supposed to be Satan or something? I couldn't tell.
Some kind of creature? I don't know.
Because I'm like, this looks vaguely like a minotaur, like a satyr kind of thing. But yeah. I don't know. Also, right down in all caps, Gwen is the mom's name. There's some Gwen Tennyson parallels here.
Did you notice when they got to Halloween Town, the giant jack-o'-lantern, it said, Halloween Town, established a long time ago. Like, that killed me. I love that.
I did not see that.
It literally just said, Halloween Town, established a long time ago. Like, yeah. I don't know if they were just lazy or if that was purposeful, but either way, I loved it.
That's great. There are some weird moments in this movie.
Yeah.
The picture in the book literally felt like a generic teenage brunette face. Like, I wouldn't tell immediately it's the young girl at all.
Yeah, no. Also, why would it be her in the first place? Like, this isn't like a prophecy kind of book. It's just a book.
Well, I feel like I got the vibe that she made it on the spot.
Ah, yeah, or that like, would make more sense.
Like constructed, like, or maybe had the book, then she just kind of just made the pictures look like them. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
With magic, with very vague, soft magic, not at all like hard system for anything.
Mm-hmm. When the grandma like first pulled out like her bag and like, you know, it was the infinite kind of thing like Mary Poppins, I was just like, is this like Mary Poppins like evil twin sister that she just doesn't like to talk about?
Yeah, that was it also reminded me of Hermione bag, same thing.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, when the nerdy kid said it must be one of those radio control models for the bag.
Yeah.
It reminded me
just like
go on. Okay, have you seen Mac and Me?
There's a movie
from the 80s called Mac and Me. It's a giant McDonald's ad. It was mixed with E.T. And basically, there's a line that's like about a teddy bear moving. It's like, oh, it's like one of those, you know, microchip ones. He, you know. What? I love when kids try and see random jargon make something make sense. That's great.
Yeah.
How did they sneak onto the bus? That did not make sense. It was a moving bus they just walked on.
It was the back of the bus, and I think it was before, like, it started moving. Because at first I thought they had just, like, gone in, like, you know, through, like, the normal door, and, like, the bus driver just, like, didn't care. But then, like, they're, like, right behind, like, the grandma in the back, so then I was just like, oh, it's the back of the bus. You could have shown that a bit better.
I get that, but it's moving. You just open the door. It's also a locked door, usually.
Yeah, and or it's either locked or it would have an alarm on it, but this was the late 90s, and safety was not really a priority then.
I laughed so hard at the line, the headless shelter.
Yeah.
I loved that. I love puns, but like that's a really good, dumb pun.
Yeah. Like, honestly, like, this, like, the writing and stuff, like, is not that bad. I think that if, like, Disney had actually given us, like, an actual, like, full film, like, budget and, like, sent to theaters, like, it would be pretty decent. Like, it's not bad, but, like, I think, like, with a bigger budget, you can get, like, better effects, better sets and things like that, and be able to go do these crazy things that the movie wants to do but can't really do a whole lot. And, like, it'd be, like, as talked about as, like, Hocus Pocus is.
Right. When Sophie showed up in Halloween Town with them, like the little girl, those who don't see the movie, there's like, again, three kids. The little one, the 5-year-old, the nerdy boy, and a 13-year-old sassy girl. When the little girl showed up in Halloween Town, like after the two other ones did, nerdy boy said, careful, she could be a mirage. How did that make any sense? Like, also, it is a hallucination or like a trick. Mirage specifically, like caused from heat exhaustion.
You're not in the desert. You are on a studio backlot.
Also, Sophie saying she followed them was not enough of an explanation. I needed more from that.
No. She said, like, oh, I was pretending to sleep, but also, like, you know, like, they were waiting by the bus stop for, like, a good solid few minutes. Like, what were you doing?
I want to see a whole movie just her just traveling. Like, it'd be great.
Yeah, because how'd she sneak on the bus without them noticing? Because they were at the very back of the bus, like, right next to the door. Well, so, like, how'd they not see her?
She's mad.
Was she just dangling from the bus while it was flying through the sky?
Yes, Toy Story style. Also, the cab said psychic cab. What does that mean?
Because it's a skeleton that drives it, but he doesn't, like, read their mind or tell them their fortune or anything like that. So what's the point?
Also, the little girl said, are you cooking chowder, Grandma? I like chowder. What was that line?
Oh, before they get into her house, because it's locked, like, there's a big gate and it's locked, the brother just goes out, touches the lock, says, well, it's locked, okay, time to go home, and just walks away. Like, I love that. That was great.
He was so, he's a trope, like, obviously, like, the nerdy, like, shy trope of a lot of kids' characters. And I was fine. He didn't have any lines that didn't feel like it came from a computer.
Yeah. But honestly, like, it worked for me, because I remember being like that at that age, and, like, him and, like, his sister, the sassy sisters, like, their relationship, like, it did feel like it was, like, a real brother-sister kind of relationship.
Then there's Sophie, or the American singer Soapy.
And yeah.
Also, not a, really good, weird. Not a good joke.
No.
But Sophie did not belong in this family. She is so weird and random. Also, the line, that's what I get for trying to use Instant. When the grandma's cooking the recipe for the magic staff. If you're in the movie, we're sounding like nonsense right now. There's a point in this movie where a grandma is trying to cook. Hold on. She has a magic staff with a ball in it. And she went to get to work. She said, I'm just going to fill it up and hope that light goes on. All right. I need more information, please. Then she makes
a
brew.
She sticks it in her magic witch microwave with buttons that says bubble, bubble, toil, and trouble.
Yeah, that was
and
really
I
funny.
Love that.
Which, if there's two settings called bubble, not a great microwave. But then she made this brew for it, like this potion thing. And she said it didn't work. She's like, that's what I get from trying to use it instant. Ugh. And like that, I'm like, half an hour and I can tell I would already love this movie as a kid. Like if I watched it. Also, I wrote down right around then, like half an hour and when we first saw the mayor is sus.
Oh yeah, easily. And like it's not that well.
Right away.
Also, one of my favorite gags was when the kids like leave to go to Halloween Town, their mom's just like watching infomercials. And then like, you know, we cut back to her, like it's probably been like a few hours. She's still watching the infomercials. Like, is there no good programming on Halloween night? Like, what are you doing?
Well, she probably is trying to avoid all the Halloween stuff on her TV.
But still, there's, like, news and other boring things you could watch. Why the infomercials?
I think from a production standpoint, the idea behind that would be just, let's put on something that isn't Halloween-related that would be on TV, and not use an actual TV show because that's copyright effort and news the same way. Also, I wrote, once again, I love the extras in this because extras are always hilarious to watch in any like low-budget movie. Yeah. Always watch extras. And the broom salesman specifically.
What was that?
His costume?
Was it an Elvis impression?
His entire outfit was, I want it. It's so dumb. Like, if I could go for I love obscure Halloween costumes. So if we went as the broom salesman from Halloween.
That would be the most obscure.
I love it. Also, the Dark Shadow Man reminded me of Palpatine mixed with the villain from Scooby-Doo 2.
Mm-hmm.
Was like, people of Ghoulsville!
Yeah.
Behold, I have a weird chrome mask and spiky hair.
Ah!
It was very much that ambiance of Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed villain, who, plot twist, isn't the dude.
Wow. That's a movie we need to talk about.
I love those movies. They're so weird. Yeah, it was very... Also, vague powers?
Yeah, like, that, and that's probably one of the biggest problems, is it's like, his powers are very vague, and then, like, his motivations are also, like, vague to basically non-existent, because just, like, what exactly is he doing? Like, I didn't understand.
At one point, I thought it was, like, trapping the members of Halloween Town, but why would you want to trap... nothing made sense with this character.
Yeah.
The threat did not feel real at all. I didn't get any sense of danger, or even, like, time, like it had to be done now. Yeah. They were just kind of walking around, wandering around, like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And to prove that point more, there's a line that the grandma says, as she's, like, freezing, she says, go! It's just an evil spell that freezes us. That is an exact quote. Go, yeah. Go! It's just an evil spell that freezes us. What was that?
Right before this scene, I forgot I wrote this quote down. This is from the, like, little girl. She says, grandma's going somewhere with the wiener dude.
What? I did not catch that.
I got it! I don't remember why it was said, but it was just like this like dorky kid that was said, like, I'm the big cheese around here, so I don't know where the girl got the wiener dude from, but it's really funny for all the wrong reasons.
The middle section of the movie where the kids just wandering around Halloween Town seeing the weird animal people was pretty boring.
Yeah, I was just like, is this the furry section of the movie? Like, what's happening here?
And when they saw the ghost man, I don't even know why they needed a ghost. It was not clear to me what needed to be happen.
And he also talked about, like, Hades. It's just like, okay, what exactly is... So, hell exists in this world now. This just makes things way more confusing.
Yeah, but the ghost man, which is a large man painted white with low opacity.
Yeah, it was
great.
And that
was the main... He's like, let's just paint this... Hey, Brian, want to get painted? Sure. It was just like, what? I like the skeleton, like, the way it was formed, like, production-wise. The skeleton mm-hmm. car man, the cool... Like, the folding the emotions in the bones... Didn't make sense, but it was fun.
Yeah, like, the effects of that were pretty decent.
But right off that back, there's a normal dog sitting in Halloween Town with no owner, just a dog chilling. And it felt the most out of place thing in the entire movie of, hey, look, it's a dog! Go get it, Bone! What? There's a moment in the movie where the dog, to get the grip of this, the skeleton man's evil in the cab, they're trying to get the kids, and to get free... She, the little girl, Sophie, sees the dog just sitting down, like, look, go get the bone! And that frees the nerdy boy from the skeleton. I don't understand that scene at all, because why was there a dog there? What happened? What was the motivation behind any of the things that happened? There's no motivations in the movie. None.
No.
It's just fun to look at and fun. It's a theme park.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Scorsese meant! It's not cinema, it's a theme park ride.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I also realized that the girl in the book at the beginning was probably meant to be actually an older version of Sophie instead, because she's more magical.
That is true. Like, I hope that in one of the sequels, it's just, like, the two sisters fighting about, like, you know, like, who gets to be the witch of the family. That's not a thing, but, like, that just seems more entertaining to me.
I also wrote down, later on, I called it Mare Was Sus, and that's important to me. I was right.
Yeah, like, when the whole final thing is happening, and, like, you know, she's trying to, like, use the staff of the ball to defeat him, I just wrote, at least they're not using the power of friendship to make it work, but then, like, you know, the whole family comes together and just starts humming to defeat the bad guy, and that works? And I was just like, well, this was written in maybe, like, 20 seconds.
Also,
what is this?
Why did Guardians of the Galaxy steal that scene?
Yes, but Guardians of the Galaxy didn't hum while it was happening.
I know, I was making a joke about that, but why did when the little nerdy boy, when he got his powers, why did his hand start sparkling? Didn't happen to anyone else?
Because he's a dude, and dudes sparkle. We're going Twilight logic on this.
I love that the grandma was named Agatha. I don't know if you caught that. Because Agatha all along.
Of course.
The mayor just stood there laughing while they held hands humming. He just stood there.
If you were in his shoes and you saw that, I think you'd be laughing too.
No, I just use the powers then. Like, I'd do my plan then.
I'd laugh first, then I would try to kill them.
When all the townsfolk came to hug them, why didn't they help? They just stood there
like,
watching them hum.
Like, you're all, like, you know, manner of monsters and creatures and stuff. Like, you could take this... You could take him down very easily. Like, what is this?
Finally, my last note is Aurora Borealis in his fingers. WTF. This kid said, when he got sparkly... And the boy, the nerdy kid, got sparkly fingers, because he naturally, of course, it had to happen when he got powers. So he had to show that... They had one to visually show that he got powers, so he made his hand sparkle. And when he got his magic, he said, it must be the static electricity... Or, you know, Aurora Borealis. I read in my book. What?
It's in the sky, sir.
It's in the poles, too. I think it was the most fun one to... No. I think it was the highest quality one to watch. The most fun one is still probably You Lucky Dog to me.
Yeah, like... Because that's my thinking. Because just, like, they did a pretty good job with this one. But as you said, like, it gets very boring around the middle. Then the end is just kind of nonsense, but not in a good way. Like, Brink is just, like, your very stereotypical, like, don't sell out, bro, kind of movie. Then You Lucky Dog is just, I don't know what it is, but it's amazing.
The other two movies we watched before had more of a plot.
Yeah.
This kind of just meandered around, showing us their fun set. And that's great. Like, that if that's what we want to do, that's awesome. I enjoyed the movie overall. I think it was, for what it was, I think it did a good job. I'm going to give this a yay overall.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a yay overall. Like, whenever I have kids, like, I'll show this to them at a young age. Just, like, you know, kind of a fun Halloween movie to put on. Right. But, like, yeah, it's nothing incredible.
I don't think it's amazing. I think it's fun. I think it serves its purpose well. And I think I would watch it again. Like, if I had kids, I'd watch that with them. And it's really cute. Like, it's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
There's no malice in this. There's no real threat or evil or anything.
Yeah, no.
But it's one that I can watch again in the future at some point. I probably wouldn't watch You Lucky Dog or Brink again. I'd probably watch it sooner than I would watch those again.
I would only watch those other ones if I was, like, showing them to someone, just saying, look at the insanity of these movies.
I agree with that. But I'm saying, in terms of chances of me watching this again, this is probably higher up on that list because of just, in life, I might watch this again because of if I have a kid or something like that. I don't know if I'm going to show You Lucky Dog or Brink to my kids if I ever have kids. Because there's nothing to it, really.
Yeah.
This is just cute, and they'll love if you ever have children, they will love these characters. I don't know if the kids would like the kids in Brink, or they like the kids or the characters in Lucky Dog. Because the characters in Lucky Dog aren't relatable or interesting.
I think they'd be frightened by You Lucky Dog, seeing just Dog Man just, like, go crazy. It's just like, Mommy, I'm scared! It's like, yes, little Timmy, you should be scared.
Now, on the note of frightening, horrifying, scary things. We are now half an hour into the podcast, and we are starting our main segment of A Quiet Place Part Dos.
Do you want me to start on this?
I'm being very quiet. It's a quiet place.
Is this the ASMR time?
No. first off, A Quiet Place Part 2, yay or nay overall?
High yay for me.
High yay! Hi-ya!
Hi-ya!
Yeah, that's a yay. I'm going to watch that again soon. Very, very soon. Yeah. I think we both loved it. Simple as that.
Yeah. Easily. Do we want to non spoilers first and get into
which
some
is
spoilers?
Very hard to do because it's hard to not.
You can't talk about this one without talking about spoiling, like, stuff that happened in the first one.
Yes. Yeah, so this will be in the non spoilers for this. It will have spoilers for A Quiet Place Part 1. So there's timestamps always in the description for these episodes, so you can skip ahead to different parts you want to see. So you can skip ahead of the news segment after this point. If you don't haven't seen the movie yet, come back and watch this or listen to this after you've seen the movie.
So we highly recommend you see the movie.
Yes. Actually, also, you can watch this one on its own. I looked at this. If you didn't want to see the first one, you can still watch and enjoy this movie on its own.
Yeah, it gives you enough context to like certain things that you'll be like, oh, okay, I understand. But like, you'll be more emotionally invested if you see the first one as well.
Right, because there's things like they walk past the rocket ship toy.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, it's a small oh moment. That's it, blink and you miss it kind of moment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things like that. This movie very much mirrors the first one in a lot of ways, and that's not a bad thing. It's not a copy. It's a good sequel.
Yeah, and that's what I was really worried about, because like when the first one came out, it was a huge hit. Paramount wanted John Krasinski to make a sequel, but he was just like, I'm not really sure. I don't want this to be like, you know, a big franchise kind of thing. If I'm going to make a sequel, I want to do it with a good idea. So they actually let him like, you know, come up with a good idea. They didn't just say, no, you're not going to do it. We're just going to hire someone else to make something. They actually gave him time, and he was the sole writer of this movie, and he did a really good job, and I thought his idea for a sequel was actually a great way to continue the story.
Also, it really, really proves his writing chops, because in the first movie, he had a draft of a script first, then he rewrote a lot of it. He didn't, like, rewrite the whole thing from scratch. He had a spec script he took in the first movie, and was handed to it, and said that he could direct it, and then he decided to rewrite a lot of it, too. Which is great, it worked really well, but showing that going from scratch... Well, kind of, okay, just a little basis for first movie. But going from that and making a sequel and making it equally or better, like, it's around that range in the first movie, that's really impressive to do.
Yeah.
Especially, he's not a writer, really. Like, he's not, like, I mean, he is now. But he wasn't really a writer or director before this.
He had directed two other movies before this. I think they were both kind of rom-coms.
Right.
As for writing, I'm not sure what else he wrote.
I think he wrote a movie with Matt.
Probably. I'm looking it up now.
No, we're gonna go with it. Moving forward.
No, wait, I found it. His first movie he directed, he had written the screenplay, and then there's another movie before A Quiet Place called Promised Land that he wrote with Matt Damon, of all people. Have not seen the movie, don't know, but I think that this movie really shows how, not just how good of a writer he is, but how good of a director he is.
Yeah, it's great. On directing note, there's a few things I loved, a few things I didn't like so much. On directing, like style wise and like editing wise and stuff, but that's not like doesn't destroy the movie in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to begin. It's non spoilery. Great performances.
Easily every single person in this movie was fantastic. Just they're so good. I love this movie.
I want to say that the deaf actress who played the young deaf girl killed this role.
Oh, she is amazing in this.
Like, everyone was great in the first one. Like, this is, like, it showed how great these children really are in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Millicent Simmons was the daughter, and then Noah Jupe was the son. And Noah's been in a lot of big Hollywood movies. He's been in Wonder, Ford vs. Ferrari, and probably still my favorite role of his, Honey Boy, where he plays a young Shia LaBeouf. But
that was
everyone
him?
In this movie is
oh,
great.
Oh, I see it now.
Him. Yep, now you see it.
Okay, yep, great actor already. But anyway, this movie is great. I'm trying to think of what else I can say non-spoilery. There's more we can say. They do a good job with the aliens.
Yeah.
They make them... It's not just relying on what we saw at the end of the last movie. Mm-hmm. There's more to it.
Yeah.
They make what happened with some of the characters, the first one who aren't around anymore. They make what happened to that worth it, I guess, is the way we put it.
Because I think a big part of this film is the kids coming into their own, and like, because like the son from the first movie, he's been like, you know, terrified of going out in the real world for obvious reasons, and like to see him like, you know, grow throughout this was great to see. And then the daughter as well, just to see her arc from the first one through this one especially was really awesome. I loved it.
I love they showed the nail again on the step.
Yeah, that scene.
Give me more anxiety.
Ooh, when we get into spoilers,
also
that,
continuity.
I think you know that one thing.
Yeah, but continuity-wise, they do a great job with like the bandages still on the fact. The fact that the house is burning, there's like, all great things that are like, oh yeah, that happened.
Yeah,
they remind you of things without telling you. They just show you things that are like, oh yep, never forgot about that.
Yeah, then you can see like the silo with like the giant hole in it. Like it's great.
I think we have to get into spoilers pretty fast because it's going to get really hard.
Yeah.
If you have not seen the movie yet, you can leave this point and come back the next when you've seen it, or go to another timestamp and watch the news part.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my god, I loved it.
Oh my god, it was so good.
But first off, Cillian freaking Murphy, the actor who plays Emmett in this, is amazing. He had one scene where he was kind of just mumbling. I don't remember fully what he said at one point.
But he was so good in this.
Oh, there's nothing I meant to say in the non-spoilers. That whatever, it's whatever in spoiler territory now. Too late. I'm saying it now. So, I watched this movie with half of my head clogged. Okay, hold on. So, I was at the beach that day, and the river before. I had water in my ear. So my left ear, I could only partially hear out of. And it was like on and off pain and on and off ringing in my left ear while I was watching the movie. So when it was dead silent, when we were in the deaf perspective, I had a slight ringing like tinnitus in my ear. And that was really weird.
Uh-huh.
I think it kind of enhanced my viewing of this movie a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because yeah. I felt at a disadvantage at some point. It's like, wait, I didn't hear that right. What's happening? I'm like, that's cool. I mean, it sucks, but like, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like also, my ears are fine now. I got like when the doctor, everything's fine. But that was like really interesting. First off, they show day one, which is amazing.
I love that. That was great.
I told you before, I didn't want a sequel. I wanted to see day one through day 89. Because the first movie starts on day 90. I really wanted to see the first 89 days. We didn't really get that, but we got day one. It was cool.
Yeah, I think showing day one, I thought that was great. I love seeing it. And I also loved that like they didn't know like, you know, it was sound or anything, but like when like Lee and his daughter, they're like ducking in like this like restaurant with a bunch of other people and like he's shushing people. It's more just kind of like out of necessity, just like, you know, don't let them hear you because like they don't know that it's sound. And it's just like shut up or they're gonna hear that we're in here. And then like, you know, shit hits the fan, but like, you know, it's still a great scene.
I also absolutely love that. Obviously, you should shush. Like, why were they talking about calling their mom? That was so dumb.
Yeah.
I get calling your mom. That one I get. But, like, past that point, once they're off the phone, stop.
Yeah. Or, like, the guy that was, like quietly praying to himself. And
that's
then, like,
Roger. They called him Raj.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he was great. I have a small problem that they fell into a racist trope I didn't like for horror movies.
The black guy dying?
Always. There were three times. Yep. I noticed right away that the there were two like young teenagers-ish in the first, and like there's a Lee's in a cafe, no, pharmacy.
Something like that. He's ducked in a place with a lot of people.
Right. And the side there's on the away from him, there are two black characters. And they're the first ones to die. Characters who have lines or say something or have a name. Because there's obviously death like scattered like characters, but like the first people we actually see who speak something and have a slight meaning that you're trying to get attached to.
Mm-hmm.
I say trying to get attached to very loosely. Like the first people who talk and that who die are two black characters, and that's dumb. And then, of course, the black cop we see who also was in Hamilton. He played Hercules. What? He played Hercules Mulligan in Hamilton.
Whoa, that's cool.
In the original cast, yeah. The black cop also immediately died. I'm like, okay, awesome. And then, near the end of the movie, it happened again. The first black character we attached to in this new place also died. And then was just, what? Why? And that was so baffling to me. Like, why did that why did that happen?
I do not think that it was intentional, but...
No.
It happened, and it's just like, oh, well, crap.
And if you're aware of the trope, you noticed it immediately.
I noticed it immediately, especially when the guy died at the end. I was just like, dang it, they really fell for that trope.
Three times. Anyway, overall, though, great film. I had a problem with the same scene, of not the exact same scene, in that pharmacy when he's talking to Roger, who's like working the pharmacy, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
During day one, he's talking to Roger, and they have a weird rack focus, which is when, if you don't know about filmmaking, it's when you... shift the focus from the things closer to the camera to things behind the far away from the camera or back and forth to change what the audience is supposed to be having their perspective with. And they hold on Roger. These are Roger or Lee. There's one in front, one in behind. They hold on one of them way too long before they flip, and it really bothered me. It's like our focus should be shifting at this point, and it's the thing I'm looking at now is blurry. Fix that, please. And I was... My one real gripe with the editing and cinematography and anything, that's about it. So if I only have one technical issue with the film, that's not a big problem.
Yeah, I didn't really notice that. I'll probably notice it now on my
streaming
viewing. But there's one thing that this movie, like the first one, did really well is the use of Chekhov's gun. And what that is, for people that don't know, it's when a filmmaker makes obvious of something that right now doesn't really have much importance, but later on it will. There are a lot of instances of that here in this movie, and it is done really, really well. Like when Emmett asks Regan at the baseball game what the sign is for diving, and then later on in a scene where they're on a pier, he signals to her the sign for dive.
I thought she said die at the beginning.
No. Dive. I was so D-I-V-E.
So when he did the sign later, I'm like, when did he learn that?
He learned that at the baseball game in the beginning because one of the players didn't dive for the base, so he asked her what the sign was for that.
That's and then great.
Okay,
I didn't pick that up because I guess it might have been my ear, but
it could have been.
Yeah, it might have been my ear, but I couldn't understand that it was dive, not die, and that's pretty funny because that does change up in the movie there. So there's a line that Emmett says to, I'm gonna call her Emily, Emily Blunt's character. I don't know her name.
Evelyn.
Evelyn. So E. When the line is say to when Emmett says to her, basically, most people aren't worth saving because I've seen what people become. I've seen what they become. And that line, whenever I hear in the apocalypse kind of thing, I see what they become. I'm like, okay, we're gonna have like marauder or like deformed people or whatever. I'm like, yep. That I'm like, when is it gonna happen? I was waiting for someone deformed or crazy to show up, like Bird Box style.
Oh, Bird Box.
Which also, the sanctuary part of this reminds me of the Bird Box thing, but then they avoided that very fast.
Yeah, which honestly like kind of made me happy. But it's again like it really helps build on this world because like you don't really think about that because like you think of like you know in the moment, but like you know there's got to be like tons of like islands and stuff out there where this stuff has like not affected them at all. So it's like they're either like oblivious to it or they know what it's happening, but they're safe, so they're fine. And to actually like see that, I was just like, that's pretty cool.
So on the note I just said, and then on the note you just said, first off about the Marauders, there are a group of people who are gone kind of mad. And I don't even think they've gone mad. I think they're just protecting their own. I think that's literally all it is.
I think they're protecting their own, but, like, from the way that they looked, I think there's some kind of, like, thing that's happening to them, and if, like, it could be, like, they've gone, like, cannibalistic because, like, you know, a lack of being able to, like, hunt and things like that. So, and, like, that could, like, deform them in some sort of way. So that could be what was happening.
My thought was maybe they were survivors of attacks as well.
That could also be that, too.
Or, like, have gotten scraped but not fully dead, or you know, and then had like, we don't know what these creatures actually do to you necessarily. We see a lot more bodies in this movie.
There's a lot more death in this movie. Like this is PG-13, but like I'm kind of surprised with how much they were able to get away with in terms of violence because like it can get pretty dark.
I think if they killed the baby, it would have been R. That's what I would have been the instant R.
But like the first thing that I was just like, I can't believe they were able to do that was when they were had triggered the sound trap when they were running through the town, and then the boy like steps into a bear trap, and like that whole scene, I was just like, it was
if you're still here and you have not seen the movie, which is, you should have seen the movie at this point. There's a scene where they're running. They all leave their home. They all left. Because they don't have a home really anymore. It's destroyed.
Yeah, because Lee's kind of dead, and like the home's kind of destroyed, so it's just like, well, it would suck a lot to stay here.
And they move on, and they go to this place, they try and find a new place, they try and find where the smoke signal was coming from the past movie and in this one, and that was to Cillian Murphy's character, who hates people. Which is fair. And so they go there, and instantly the little boy, I don't remember his name, steps in a bear trap, and it's graphic. It's great. I loved every character in this. Jamon Hunts, I don't have his name, the actor. Djimon Hunson. We'll learn eventually. He's also in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's an Aquaman, he's in a lot of super movies. But he is an actor I always recognize instantly. But I shouldn't, because he's not huge in anything. He does great. He did as well. It's sad that you realize that his kids are probably going to die, too. Like, everyone on the island is dead.
Yeah.
Like, well, pretty much.
Not entirely, because there was only one of them that made it there. And yes, people did die, but I think that enough people survived. I hope, at least.
See, now I actually wouldn't mind a part three now.
Yeah,
because at first I was skeptical of part two. But now I'm like, okay, you can continue this.
Yeah, because it leaves it off in a way, well, I guess because we're already spoiling it, so I guess we'll spoil the ending. There's kind of like this, like The Last of Us kind of vibe between Killian Murphy's character and Millicent's character of just kind of like getting to the island to find this signal of because there could be survivors. And in the first movie, Millicent was able to figure out through her, what's the thing?
Aid?
I can't think of the name. Hearing aid, yes. Her dad had created a hearing aid to try to help her hear, but it didn't work. But it did send off a signal to kill the that can weaken and kill the monsters. So if they're able to find that signal, then they could broadcast that signal everywhere so that people could like realize that, like, oh, we can actually fight back against the aliens now.
I love the end. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I love the ending had very Stranger Things vibes. You can even the lighting and everything, like the kids moving forward. The mirroring. I love that there was two main conflicts happening of Elizabeth, Emily Blunt, and Honey Boy. And they were in this like oil tanker, which is really cool. I also love that in there, oxygen wise, you can't breathe in there for too long because it's an oil tanker.
I didn't even register that at first because when they first go into Killian, it's the keeping timer. Time. I thought he was just waiting for the monster to go away because I didn't realize that you had limited amount of oxygen in there.
How fast did you realize that in the movie?
It wasn't until the son got himself locked in there because before Killian had a towel in place to keep it from locking, but because he was running in there away from one of the aliens, he had locked himself in there and couldn't get back out.
Right.
And then he was having trouble breathing, and then I was just like, oh,
did you think the towel was
there's no
sound
oxygen
then?
In there? I thought that it was just so that because I registered they'd be able to get locked in there, but I knew the whole time that it was soundproof. I didn't register that there was lack of oxygen in there.
Right. So I got it. Some point, I don't remember how, timeline-wise, but pretty early on, what's the timer? I kept asking myself, what's the timer for? I'm like, wait, because it happened when there wasn't anything around there either much. So I thought to myself, okay. Oh, oil! You can't bring that. I'm like, okay. Made sense. But anyway, so the weakness in the movie, there was two conflicts. There was the main conflict on the island, the main conflict with them in the tanker trying to both survive. Mm-hmm. And these kids taking charge was so cool mirrored.
I loved it.
The slicing of the head versus the gunshot was so perfect. Mm-hmm. Everyone's great. Just watch this movie. I mean, you probably have your listener right now. It's fantastic. If you're at this point still watching and you're convinced and you don't care about spoilers, go see it. Because if nothing else, the visuals and the storytelling and the performances are amazing.
Like if you're someone that doesn't really like horror movies, these films are ones that I would highly recommend you check out because it's more about the family and the relationships and how they evolve through this horrible situation that they find themselves in and just their will to survive.
But if you like horror, it's still great.
Oh yeah, easily. Like the tension in these films is so good. It's so much better than 95% of horror movies that have come out, and I still stand by that.
Then it just drove a boat.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
It didn't drive a boat.
No,
but
I know.
It
paddled, probably, and stuff. Like, that was...
It must have already, been inside of the boat or something.
Yeah.
That we just didn't see.
It was cool. Clever. For timeline-wise, we have to stop talking about this because we can talk forever. Great movie. Please watch it.
Highly recommend.
If you haven't...
See it in... Yeah.
You've all seen it. Peters, you've all seen it. If you're fully vaccinated, you feel safe, go see it in the theater. If you don't feel safe, watch it when it comes out and you can. Safety first. Okay, so next up we have... Also, yay. Across the board, yay.
Yes. Yeah. Hi, yay.
Hi, yay. I think now if you have a super high yay, it has to be hi-ya.
Hi-ya.
Next up for news, of course, news time. Knives Out 2 casting, Josh.
Yay! More!
Joining an already packed cast, we have Kate Hudson joining, who I have literally I looked it up. I've seen in one thing ever, and that was the movie Clear History, and I don't remember anything about her in it, or the character.
I don't think I've seen her or anything, but I have heard she's a good actress, so I'll give it. Give it a yay. I'll still give it. But no, we still have to give it a nay.
No, great. It's a Netflix movie. Netflix movie. Yep. Anyway, moving on. Cool. More actors and actresses. Love it. Join it. That's awesome.
Yes.
Next up, we have from Collider and many other sources, DC is making an animated Injustice movie, and they said, "So you can finally watch an evil Superman movie. We've gotten that."
We've gotten it not just in movies, but we've gotten it in multiple shows now.
We've gotten Brightburn and The Boys and Omni-Man and Invincible, and we've gotten it in BVS. Snyder
like,
Cut.
It's not new anymore.
I don't want this movie anymore. Like, I don't care anymore. Like, I
still do.
I'm giving this a nay because we've already seen it. We've gotten teased at the idea in cinemas with the Snyder Cut. So, like, you could just finish what that is and make it Injustice, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem with not just the evil Superman, but making it an animated movie, like, it's based on a video game, which is already animated, so it's just like, what exactly are you going to be able to do with this? If this was live action, that would be a different story, but because it's going to be realistically like an hour 20 to an hour and a half animated movie, you're also going to have to highly condense the story of the game down, so I don't know what it's going to be like, but there is a part of me that is excited. But I do have to agree with you. I'm going to give it a nay, just because, like, we've seen Evil Superman so much, and just, like, the other reasons I listed.
Nay. Next thing on the news is something we actually kind of called last time. Alan Scott official casting. Jeremy Irvine, who was in Mamma Mia 2, as young, I think, Sam, who we said was rumored in talks. That news came up while we were on the podcast last week.
Yes.
And we talked about it and said, in talks, and now he's been confirmed as being cast. As Alan Scott, aka the original Green Lantern in comics, who's also in comics now gay. So, and they're casting him as, I think, a gay character. I'm pretty sure.
I think that's what they've said. Yeah. Or at least that's how it's being reported.
Yeah, and that's cool. I'm fine with that. Also, I don't know how it's going to play. It might be like, he'll dance with a man like Lil Fu did. And that's about it. You never know how it's going to be.
Or like in Cruella with the one fashion designer that acts gay but never says that he's gay or, like, you know, goes out with a man or does anything like that. Again, this is Disney's, like, seventh time for their quote-unquote first gay character, and it's all the same. So it's just, like, do better.
I know last week I gave it a yay because I like, because Mamma Mia 2 is fun. But I'm giving it a nay now because Alan Scott, I think, should be older.
I'm going to give it an indifferent yay because good casting. I'd like Mamma Mia 2.
But I'm fine with the casting as an actor, I think, but as a character standpoint, the character is usually an older character. Yeah. I think 50s-ish, and that's because he's meant as a mentor. He got his ring from magic, from Chinese magic, which is not...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so overall, I'm going to give that a nay because character design... I don't know this world. I don't know how they're going to do these characters yet. It might be a flashback. I don't care. So, because I don't know the world enough yet for this show on HBO Max, or it's HBO Max, I think, right? HBO?
Yeah.
Because the casting's still good, I'll give it a yay. Whatever. Next up is news from MGM buyout with Josh.
Okay, so like last week with the big merger with WarnerMedia and Discovery, Amazon has just bought a mega film studio, MGM. They bought them for $8.45 billion, which means that Amazon will now have access to more than 4,000 movies and 17,000 TV shows. I don't know if that's an actual like TV show numbers or if that's episodes, but that's still a lot. With this, it's kind of hilarious at the irony of it all, because back in like late 2020, MGM was trying to get like studios to buy the newest James Bond movie, No Time to Die. They wanted something like close to like $1 billion, but like no studio was going to pay that much for it. And the fact that they're selling their own company for like not a huge amount more than that one movie really kind of shows just like what their company like really can do now. Because back in the day, like when film studios had started, they were one of the biggest ones of all time. But now lately, most of their movies that they do, they don't actually distribute them themselves. They just produce them. Like right. The Creed films, they produce those. They don't really do a lot. The only big movies they've done have been like the James Bond movies. They did, like, I think the Addams Family remake, but that didn't do well. The Florence Pugh movie, right. Fighting With My Family, that wasn't big either. And the Hustle, that Anne Hathaway movie. Like, any movie that they've done that isn't James Bond has been kind of a big bomb. So, like, this kind of low number doesn't really surprise me.
And MGM buying out, Amazon buying out MGM. First off, that MGM was, I think, originally one of the big seven studios.
Yeah, they were.
Which is insane to me that Amazon bought them out. Ugh, Jeff Bezos. But Emma's, this would normally be big enough news to be the whole segment for the main topic. But then Quiet Place 2 happened, and we care more about that. Also, this news, like, I don't honestly care that much about it, because it's just like, oh, yay, more Amazon. Like, I don't know.
In this article, it says that Amazon, like, compared to MGM,
what article? Like, what source?
On CNN.
Gotcha.
They said that back in 2017, when Amazon bought Whole Foods, they paid $14 billion for that. They paid more for a grocery company than a film studio. That's
sad.
Insane.
One of the big seven, the big seven were originally like seven major studios when it started. And anyway, that's crazy. Next up is also from Josh's news palette of Uncharted. Had got a picture released of the movie, and it looks like just two guys standing in a room.
Okay, so this is gonna be my tangent time about this movie. So recently there was a pic released for the Uncharted movie starring Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg, and the picture is just them like in a room somewhere, like looking at something, and all I see is Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. I do not see Nathan Drake, and I do not see Sully. Now, I understand that it is a prequel and that, like, you know, it's to evolve their characters. I get that. That makes sense. But that's kind of a problem when I see an image of the movie of these characters, supposedly, and I don't see the characters. That's kind of that's problem number one. Problem number two, this movie has been stuck in development hell for a very long time. Originally, it wasn't even supposed to be a prequel. It was supposed to be, like, you know, an actual movie based off the games. I think the original writer still wrote this version of the movie, but it's been going through multiple directors over the years. I think the last director before this one was supposed to be Sean Levy, who's produced things like Stranger Things, Arrival, and is directing the upcoming Ryan Reynolds movie, Free Guy. But he dropped out of that because the film just was not getting moved. And then Spider-Man Homecoming came out, and Sony was like, Tom Holland, he was great in that.
Take a breath.
And so Spider-Man Homecoming came out, was a big success. Sony saw that and said, hey, let's give him the Uncharted movie, and just kind of completely changed the movie because of that. Hence, I imagine why so many directors have been detached from the project. But now, Ruben Fleischer, director of the Zombieland movies, and Venom directed the movie. Mark Wahlberg was cast as Sully. I hate that casting. Great actor. Wrong for this character. It's still a prequel. Don't know when it's set in the game. But I really hope that it's a true prequel and doesn't do like things like what Solo did. But yes, I'm worried. I'll still see it, but I'm keeping my expectations low, because, like, so far, we've had, like, pretty decent video game movies, like Tomb Raider, Detective Pikachu, Mortal Sonic. Kombat. Like, it's been pretty decent.
Sonic
this, I think,
Hedgehog.
Could be the tipping point. Sonic is the best of them. I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
Okay.
But, yeah, this, yes.
As someone who's not played the games, I'm indifferent. They don't look like the characters I've seen in the games, though, so I don't really care. I mean, as a picture standpoint, it's one frame in a movie.
Like, Tom is fine as a young Nathan Drake, but...
Next up is about the Powerpuff Girls. So, the CW is making a Powerpuff Girls reboot when they're, like, in their 20s and sad, basically.
Basically like Riverdale, but more adults, and they have
and
powers.
And it's silly. And the idea of taking these cute, fun characters as a kid, and they've grown up now. Live action, it's
Chloe Bennett.
Thank you. And I should know these names at this point.
Dove Cameron,
Yana Peralt.
Yeah.
And Donald Faison is in it. I don't know who he plays.
I don't know.
But basically, the story here is this was just apparently probably a huge miss for CW. They wrote and filmed a plot, a series, and CW hated it. Apparently, the script leaked online. Like, someone leaked it from the industry, and it has gotten taken down from copyright claim, meaning it is actually from that studio, which is hilarious.
And if you've read the script,
it's so bad.
It's a thing.
It's so bad.
My this is my theory about it, because the show is being developed by Diablo Cody, Academy Award nominated writer, wrote movies like Juno, Tully, Young Adult, great writer. And then the other person that's writing it, she's written for shows like Veronica Mars and Sleepy Hollow. So they both have great work under their belt. My theory is that they were really going for kind of a satirical, more kind of show, making fun of CW shows like Riverdale and things like that, kind of making fun of like the way kind of like our culture is now and just seeing like what the Powerpuff Girls would be like now. But again, not to be taken seriously, to be taken like, and it's like, oh, this is all ridiculous about it all. But whoever directed it, I don't know who did. They might have taken it the wrong way, or the script just could be terrible. Reading it just how it is, without any context to anything, it's not that good.
They changed Mojo Jojo to being, first off, a human scientist, and then the villain is his son.
Yes.
And he's a monkey.
I think there, before like the pilot script got leaked, people were theorizing that like one of the Powerpuff Girls was going to have a relationship with Mojo Jojo's son. And I was just like, they're not going to do that. Then I thought for 2 seconds and realized Riverdale's on there. I'm like, oh god, they're going to do that, aren't they?
Remember, we are the Flash. Anyway, yay or nay for MGM buyout? Nay. Hard nay.
Nay.
Hard nay. Amazon's the worst. And for Uncharted pick?
Nay.
I'm indifferent, but to be annoying to Josh, I'm going to give it a yay.
How dare you?
And for the Powerpuff Girls pilot being reworking the whole pilot. They've scrapped it and they are redoing the whole thing now. Rewriting, restoryboarding, everything.
I am willing to bet they're gonna like scrap any kind of like satirical kind of take or just like comedy or whatnot and just try to make it like actually serious. And with CW, that could go either way. So we won't know until we see it. But if this one's also bad, they'll probably just cancel it entirely.
When it comes
which
out,
I think would be a shame.
When it comes out, we should watch a few episodes of Powerpuff Girls beforehand and then watch the pilot for the podcast.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Yay or nay on this news? I'm going to give it a yay that's being reworked.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a yay
and
as
yay
well.
Because I think what I've read is pretty hilarious of the original script.
And maybe, yes,
I like laughing.
It's not funny for the right reasons, no. Though. Or it could be. Who knows? It depends on your taste.
Next up is actually about J.J. Abrams. Again? Of course, again. What?
J.J. Abrams.
So he said that Star Wars should have had a plan. Which sounds like an Onion article.
Yeah. With this, I don't know how to feel about this, because, like, you think back to, like, the original trilogy, there really wasn't...
There
was no plan. And here, there didn't need to be, because, like, 7 started one place, 8 continued it, and then 9 happened.
It was still one vision the whole time. It was still Lucas doing the 3 movies. Not necessarily directing, having the say in all 3.
Yeah. And then the sequel trilogy, like, you know, first two, like, it seemed very natural, and then the third one was just kind of trying to appease everyone and get the status quo back to normal, like we said last week. It didn't need a plan, it just needed more time.
Right, the first one, episode 7 was basically, oh, it's too familiar. Episode 8 was, oh, it's too different. Episode 9 is, what do you want then?
Yeah, just like, we can't do either or, you hate us both if we do both? Like, what do you want from us?
Next up, we're getting more into some Marvel news. We have 3 Marvel news things here. Eternals trailer dropped.
Yes.
Oh, hold on, J.J. Abrams. Nay, because you're dumb. We knew that.
Yeah, like
we knew there needed to be some vision. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's not enough for an article. That's a dumb thing for a whole art, for a bunch of articles were saying this. Like, that's not news. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yay or nay for that.
I'll just give it a nay, because like it's like you could have a plan, but you also couldn't. It just like time is a key factor in just figuring it all out, and like clearly with 9, they just did not have the time.
I'm gonna give the Eternals trailer also. You're gonna hate me. I'm giving the trailer a nay right now. I'm gonna have to watch it a few more times because I just don't care right now a lot. I'm trying to get invested in these characters more, but like. Because MCU is so established at this point, bringing in a whole new, I guess, giant intellect team who's like, we're so powerful, but we didn't want to interfere. What?
Yeah.
It felt wrong, and it's the excuse that I feel like they're going to do with Mutants too. And it's like, we want to stay out of the shadows. Like, you need a better explanation than that now.
I can understand that, but also, like, this is a story that takes place, the director said, over, like, 7,000 years, so clearly there's a lot that will be explored. But the director of The Eternals, Chloe Zhao, who just won multiple Oscars for her film Nomadland, directed The Eternals, and just from that alone, like, I am really excited. Nomadland was amazing.
The visuals are beautiful.
Oh my god, yes. Like, because she's even said, like, they try to use, like, natural, like, lighting and shooting, like, real outdoors, like, as much as possible. And, like, you can really tell the difference. Obviously, like, there's sometimes, like, where they'll use effects to enhance certain things, but, like, there's a clear difference.
I liked the character, like the actors in this a lot. They're all, like, I haven't seen all of them and everything, but, like, the casting overall looks pretty great. It looks beautiful. The costumes to me are not colorful enough right now. Because these characters are really colorful. They're like... Also, that's why I think the X-Men should also be really colorful, too, because these are really colorful characters. And you can do colorful characters, so they wish they did a little more of that, but I don't have a lot of complaints. I'm very neutral right now. I'm leaning towards Nate because I want to be less neutral. That's what all it is. Because the MCU at this point, I love so much, I want to be a little more hyped when I see a trailer. That's all it is. And it told me... Was it a teaser? Was it?
I think it was more of a teaser.
Was it labeled a teaser or was it labeled a trailer? Because that changes things.
Give me one moment.
Either way, I want a little bit more. I knew nothing, and I don't. That's normally a good thing, but I want a little bit something to care about anyone here.
Yeah, I get that. It was kind of like with the Shang-Chi trailer, but, like, for that, like, I still didn't, like, I don't really know the characters, but, like, the way the trailer is and just, like, just how awesome it is, like, that's the best way I can explain it, like, was just, like, it gets me hyped despite, like, not knowing much.
Yeah.
Here, this is kind of, it's kind of going for more of, like, an epic kind of, like, drama kind of feel, so it's a bit more difficult to get hyped for that.
I love that.
And it's labeled as a teaser.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. I love that the Shang-Chi trailer does not look like an MCU film either. Anyway, next up, you said yay? Cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a yay.
Again, my NA is hesitant. I'm pretty indifferent right now. I wanted to be having more hooked with this. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
The Okoye spinoff show is the thing that's
I did hear about that.
Denai Gurira to reprise Okoye in Black Panther Wakanda Forever and Disney Plus Origin spinoff series. If the Origin spinoff series is of the Dora Milaje in general, but not just Okoye, I think I'm more interested.
Yeah, but I don't think it could be that, because if she's starring in it, then it couldn't be an origin story about them, because, like, they existed before her. So
right.
I'm thinking what it is that it's the Wakanda show that Ryan Coogler is developing. It could be that, because it's not really confirmed yet exactly. Oh, it is?
It's nope. Scrap what I just said.
So I'm thinking that it is, like, Ryan Coogler's Wakanda show that he's developing, and she'll be the lead of that, which I'm excited for. I'm excited for everything Marvel, but Ryan Coogler is fantastic in everything that he's done, so I'm excited.
I'll watch everything, but my excitement goes in, and it's about, like, just...
Yeah.
Her character's media just seems very strict. We are fighting for our nation right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of her character besides that yet. Not like a lot with her yet. She seems very passionate, very driven. I love her qualities as a character, but I want to see a little more of who she is if you were making a show about her, which I guess I would explore. So that's a yay. I like MCU. I like Black Panther. I like Wakanda. So yay.
Same.
Next up is the most confusing news of all of this, and it's about Quicksilver, sort of.
Yes.
It's about Kick-Ass, sort of. Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe's version of Quicksilver in Avengers Age of Ultron. He also was Kick-Ass in Kick-Ass, and he's in Godzilla, a bunch of huge roles. But the MCU part is what I'm going to focus on here. So he is in talks, not in talks, he is confirmed now to play in Sony's film Kraven the Hunter. Kraven the Hunter is a Spider-Man villain. So this is the movie that's going to be like the Venom movies, the Morbius movies, the other spin-off movies that are based around Spider-Man's foes, without Spider-Man. But this casting is like when they brought in Evan Peters and Wanda.
It gives off those same kind of vibes.
But this is more confusing to me.
Yes.
Because that went nowhere.
Yes, but here, for those of you that aren't aware, the way Sony's deal with Marvel, it's very confusing, because Sony's, like, Venom, Morbius, like, those things, they don't exist in the MCU, but they also do. It's very weird. It's a very weird, like, fine line kind of thing. But, like, if you've seen the Morbius trailer, like, right. Michael Keaton's Vulture shows up. There's a spoiler for Far From Home in there. And, like, and then, but then you also have Andy Serkis, director of Venom 2, saying that it's its own thing, not in the MCU. And then you have this casting, which makes it more confusing because it means that, like, you know, he'll show up in the MCU probably at some point as Kraven. But he's Aaron Taylor Johnson. Like, he's going to look pretty similar to Quicksilver.
Which, because No Way Home, Spider-Man, the third MCU Spider-Man film, is going to be about partially the multiverse, reportedly, as will Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. Mm-hmm. What I think is going to happen is Wanda's going to see this version and be very confused
of Kraven. Yeah.
But making Kraven at all related to Wanda Maximoff, like, not like related, but like having them have like any kind of connection, is a weird choice to put at this character.
I don't think that's their intention, because as no, we know with Sony, Sony doesn't usually think when it comes to these movies.
But I mean, like, if they're going to connect it, and Feige will definitely have Wanda see him.
Oh, yeah.
Which means it's a very weird character for to use Kraven as that stand-in at the same face.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Unless, like, he's going to look, like, completely different. Like, will, like, have, like, a full, like, thick beard, like, long hair, like, make him look visibly different. Like, but, like, if he just looks the same, that's going to be a problem.
It doesn't matter for, like, the characters like Josh Brolin's Cable versus Thanos, if Deadpool comes in the MCU, that doesn't matter because he's so different as Thanos looking versus Cable.
Yeah,
like, they're different characters.
Yeah, or, like, Gemma Chan, she was in Captain Marvel, and now she's the main character in The Eternals.
Right.
But, like, you know, in Captain Marvel, she was an alien. Like, she looks visibly different than how she does in The Eternals.
But this casting, so Kraven the Hunter, if you don't know where, he's a hunter who's crawls around the world trying to find the biggest hunt. He eventually sees Spider-Man as it's just pride and ego. He's like, I want to hunt Spider-Man this day. I've defeated the hardest creature to hunt. That's his whole motivation, is he just wants to kill Spider-Man to say, I've done the best hunt. I've gotten the best. And that's like how a lot of hunters are, with the idea of getting the biggest game. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And I thought Kraven would work well in a Venom movie of replacing that with that.
Yeah.
That would make sense to me, but this is different. I guess in this movie, if you include Tom Hardy's Venom in it, it could make sense. But right now, what are you going to do with Kraven without Spider-Man? Like, that character doesn't really work on his own, because he's just a hunter.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to find some animals, rah. But he, like, maybe they'll throw in, like, aliens or something, I don't know. But he needs something big and monstrous to try and hunt. Also, we don't want to root for him.
Like, yeah, like, he's not a character you're supposed to root for. Even, like, Kraven's Last Hunt, like, which kind of explores more of his psyche, like, it's still not a story, like, where you're supposed to sympathize with him.
He's not a compelling, like, he's not a good person at all inside. Like, if you say in the Venom movie Venom is complicated or anti-hero, Kraven can't really be an anti-hero, because his whole thing is he just kills animals.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to make a bit sympathetic. Because it's not just, like, hunting, like, deer. It's, like, hunting, like, lions rhinos, tigers, like, these giant things.
He wears a lion mane on his collar. Like, he's not a... He is a poacher, and he hurts endangered animals. This is not a good person. So it's weird to try and use this character as your protagonist. Like, a movie called Kraven the Hunter sounds awesome to me. Like, the idea of that. Like, you could call it, like, even, like, Spider-Man Kraven the Hunter, or like Kraven the Hunter, a Spider-Man story, or something, and include some element of Spider-Man or another Marvel character for him to try and think of the biggest hunt, the biggest game. But without that, I'm very confused on what the plot could be.
Yeah, this is just kind of like my biggest problem with Sony doing their own movies at all. Like, because at first, Spider-Man was never going to be in them. And so it's just like, well, why are you making all these movies without Spider-Man? Because he's kind of a key player in all their stories in some way. And to not have that, it's a very weird thing to do. But now he sort of is, but he's still not. It's a weird thing. I'm giving this whole thing an A. Aaron Taylor Johnson, great actor, and I think he could be a good choice, but the whole thing is just an A for me.
But he's also not great at accents, so I'm concerned about that. We saw in Age of Ultron.
I think this time, like, we'll get a better accent.
I don't. It's Sony. Who knows? Yeah, I'm gonna give it an A, but I'm open. I'm curious though, because the opportunities it leads with the multiverse is confusing.
Yes.
I don't want Sony's characters to join the MCU necessarily, but I also want to see Venom versus Spider-Man, but I want to see a different Venom. I want to see Venom that's actually, like, connected to Spider-Man's past and has the symbiote.
Yeah.
That, because the Venom, Tom Hardy's Venom to me is not really a Venom, because Venom's entire purpose comes from Spider-Man's personality first.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a whole mess of Sony. which we'll eventually talk about probably more in depth later on, but this is
Yes.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson, great actor, cool Quicksilver, and it kind of defeats any hope of him coming back as Quicksilver ever again.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm most disappointed about is, because one of, with multiverse stuff, I'm like, maybe we'll get him back as Peter Maximoff, Pietro.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great, but that kind of, nope. Yeah. I thought it might happen with all the interdimensional travel coming forward, but no.
Yeah.
And so, ending with superheroes, we're going to go into superheroes now. And today's super weird story is about a character again, like last week, because Josh seemed to like that one, and I thought it was pretty funny last time. Here's a quote, ready for it?
Yes.
One murder will not conceal another. That is the tagline for this character, apparently.
I thought you were going to say this is this character's catchphrase.
It might be. I don't know. There's not a lot of information about this character. So this character debuted in 1944. All right?
Mm-hmm.
They are called Dr. Vampire.
Okay, Mr. Five-Year-Old Writer.
Well, the funny part about that is he hunts vampires. He's not one. He's not a vampire. He just hates them. So it's confusing because you're like, if you're fighting Nazis, you wouldn't call yourself Dr. Nazi.
Yeah, that makes so many implications you don't want on your shoulders.
Yeah, Dr. Vampire is a dumb name already. His outfit, ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the last time the other guy was in a purple suit and it was like a leotard, like a skin tight Hispanic suit?
Yeah.
This guy is in a blue suit, but it's not leotard. It's actually like a blue, like, suit and tie.
Ah.
He wears, like, white shoes, like a blue suit and tie, like Dick Tracy style. Blue fedora.
Because, okay.
And a magenta cape.
This is, I don't even know
he
how
doesn't
to
have
react
a mask.
To this.
There's no mask for this character.
Of course.
He's got a stick.
Just like a stick,
like
just like a branch from a tree.
It looks like a sword. It's not a sword. It's just like one long wooden rod. Probably it's like a stake, like because vampires to kill them.
Uh huh.
But it's very long.
Is it like a walking cane size?
He holds it upright, so it's like a sword, but it's just one long wooden pointy rod. And that's how he goes about his business. Now, it's unclear if this character is actually hunting vampires or hunting bloodthirsty people. And the weirdest part about this character is no one knows who created him.
All right.
Like, that's baffling to me. Like, they know who published it. It was published by Harry H. Chester Publishing for Skyrocket Comics number one. But there's no author.
What?
There's no author, and no one knows who created the character.
It's just one day the comic just appeared mysteriously in an alleyway.
There are no records of who created the character.
That is crazy. So, like, no, like, writer, no illustrator, no nothing?
I have not found, but it says created by unknown, and my book, I have a book and an article, both say, the book says created by who knows, ? And the article says created by unknown. People do not know who created this character. And that, for a character called Dr. Vampire, feels fitting.
It's the one unsolvable mystery that no one will ever be able to figure out. That's what gets people to read the comics. They're like, who wrote this?
And it's not like, a great comic series. It's very short. Like, of course, because most of them are forgettable. If I bring up a character, they're probably weird and forgettable. So he's shrouded in mystery. Like there's no credits to his name. He had one sole appearance, and there's no credits to his name. So I mean, that means no author, no artist, nothing. The actual character's real name is Dr. John Rogers. Yeah, pretty basic name. Also, he's white. Not surprising.
What? No.
So, shocked by civilization's failure to stamp out the curse that causes the lust to kill, he then became Dr. Vampire.
All right, then. Wonderful backstory. Batman, eat your heart out.
Armed with a heavy, pointed wooden stick, the pseudonym Dr. Vampire, a doctor of what? No one knows either. takes the night to wipe out the vampire menace. So, you know, it's not clear if in this world there's also, there's no for sure vampires even existing in his world.
So this man is just delusional.
Potentially.
He thinks vampires are real. They might not be. He thinks he's a doctor. We don't know what his medical degree is, if he even exists.
And his one and only comic he has one adventure he's ever done. That's it. So his one adventure. This guy's just a guy with a stick. In his one adventure, he takes on a scene of a grisly vampire murder. So Doc's one and only adventure takes him to the scene of a grisly vampire murders committed at a Red Barn Playhouse, which is in the middle of nowhere, yet it is depicted as especially popular with Tucson Tales crowd. And that's a fun phrase. And
the 40s were a time.
Yeah. As an investigator, because apparently he's an investigator too, naturally, Dr. Vampire leaves a lot to be desired as a character. He wanders about the barn, coming face to face with a slobbering vampire, without seeming to recognize his fang-filled mouth for what it is. So he sees a vampire, doesn't recognize it's a vampire. That's for his...
what he does.
Yeah, for his one thing he does is hunt vampires. He doesn't know one when he sees one.
That's like Blade saying that, like, you know, I hunt vampires for a living, but he just goes around just punching random people and, like, not actually killing any vampires. Like, dude, do better.
Yeah, it's weird. He doesn't... And maybe it isn't even vampires that he is really hunting. It's so unclear. But I just think this character is fascinating. Basically, it's more racial profiling than anything else.
Ah.
For kind of Romani people. Because the book says the G slur for referencing what he's looking for. That's not great. But no. Also, what happened in this major scene is he found a woman who was bitten by a man thirsty for blood. But it's really unclear if it's a vampire or some crazy guy. It's never explained. This man just seems like a delusional man with a wooden stick. And that is my favorite part of the story. Actually, my favorite part of the story is that we don't know who created the character.
Yeah.
So in this one-off issue in 1944, we got an issue of a guy called Dr. Vampire who hunts maybe vampires, but he does not recognize them. And when the one time he finds one, it might not even be one. That's his whole story.
He's an investigator, but he may also be a doctor. And he goes by doctor, but he may not be a doctor. It doesn't make sense.
What do you think?
Yeah, this was weird and like nonsense, but it's fun to just learn about these mysterious characters that appear for like an issue or two, and then they're never heard from again.
Yeah, it was also the funny thing is it was Skyrocket Comics number one. So like, we're starting something with this and never went anywhere. I'm sure Skyrocket Comics continued, but this character didn't. I don't know. The idea of vampire hunters are always still kind of fascinating. Like, Blade exists. Morbius both is and isn't one. He is a vampire. It's complicated with that character. But this isn't a field that you can... this is a kind of character that you can keep going on with for a long time if you wanted to. But if they went with the route of he's delusional, just hunting people who are drinking blood, that'd be more fascinating. Like, why are people just drinking blood? I want to learn more about that, if that's the case.
Yeah.
That is it for this podcast. We had to talk about A Quiet Place Part 2. We talked about Halloween Town and Dr. Vampire. This is kind of a horror-themed podcast this week.
Yes.
Completely unintentional.
Not intentional, but it worked.
It worked. And I like the Newsweek, too. It's all fascinating and stuff. And thank you all so much for listening. If you want to have any comments, questions, concerns, or want to have a shout-out, then please email us at nerdtalkproductionsyt@gmail.com. Or tweet at us at nerdtalk_prod, and you can join with the hashtag GeekSpeakPod, and you can get on the podcast in some way. You can get your note or your information or your question asked and answered. That'd be great. Also, please leave reviews, 5-star reviews on Apple and Google Podcasts and Audible and all the places you listen to podcasts. Leave reviews, follow us, please. Help us tell your friends. Josh, where can they find you?
The social medias, Instagram, J_Rudy16, Twitter, J_Rudy28, YouTube, Josh Rudolph. And yeah, go watch everything that I've done, or don't. I don't know. I don't want to scare you away.
That's completely fair. Same here. You can find me at, I run the Nerd Talk social medias, so you can find me there. But also at Twitter, at The Theater Nerd, and yeah, you can find us here. So... thank you all for listening. Please check back again next week. We're uploading mostly on Sundays, so that might change, but who knows? Thank you. Bye!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.